Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello, it's episode 341 of the podcast, presented by Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals based in the city of Los Angeles. Today's Flashback Friday interview of the week is former ESPN play-by-play voice and current Chicago Cubs TV voice, John Bukchambi. I think it was an interview we did back in July of 2020, talking, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. But before we get into it, I wanted to announce a few things because we got some big news regarding the podcast in the coming weeks. Starting May 1st, 2021, The O Show will be moving into Star Worldwide Network Studios in Scottsdale, Arizona. Again, that is starting May 1st of 2021. We'll be partnering with Broadcast Hall of Fame radio host Dave Pratt. Star Worldwide Networks is one of the fastest growing internet media producers, distributors, and marketing agencies in the nation. I mean, the network and full marketing agency is celebrating 10 years. They offer hundreds of worldwide radio and TV shows, general advertising, media buying, all digital services, audio and video, commercial production, content management for social networks, PR, graphics, audiobook recording, branding, consultation throughout, you know, you name it, man. You know, for us, that means a brand new studio, full video episodes weekly on YouTube. You know, you're probably wondering what this means for you, the listener. Really nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. It's going to be the same exact format, you know, except for three shows a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We're going to go down to two shows a week, every Wednesday and Friday. Again, new shows of The O Show every Wednesday and Friday, starting past May 1st of 2021. But that's not all. That is not all. The O Show will also become available a part of the Diamante Media Group. So Diamante Media Group is headed by Colorado Rockies TV analyst and former player Ryan Spielberg's all full video episodes dating back to last summer to now will be available on their network at DiamanteNetwork.com. Again, full video episodes dating back to last summer to now will be available at DiamanteNetwork.com, as well as YouTube starting May 1st with Star Worldwide Networks. And obviously, we here at The O Show are stoked for the future of the podcast. It means bigger guests, better content across the board, and more video content than we've ever had before coming your way. So I want to take this time to say, you know, thank you to the listeners. I really still don't pay attention to how many of you actually listen to this, but for anyone who's a consistent listener of me and my work here on the show from, you know, I just want to say thank you for your support, and I really appreciate, all the time you guys put in. So we're only getting started here on the show, and I greatly appreciate the support. And with all that said, we've got one more special surprise, I guess you could say, before this week's interview with John Bukchambi. We've got another video message answering a few quick questions that I wanted answered. For those of you that remember, we had Lecrae answer a few quick questions back in January that he sent into the show. He couldn't come on, so he ended up sending a few questions over, or I sent him a few questions over. He answered those questions and sent them back. But this time around, on April 16th, 2021, we've got a comedian. He's an actor. He's a former late-night host. He was the star of his own sitcom show that was on the air for six seasons. His late-night show, Lopez Tonight, aired from 2009 to 2010. And his new movie, No Man's Land, is available now on a streaming platform. So here is George Lopez. He's talking about his favorite scene from the George Lopez show, his favorite moment hanging with Slash, his favorite guitar solo, and what it was like stealing Freddie Prinze's tombstone. So thanks to George Lopez for this. This is episode 341 of The O Show with John Boog Shambi. Hit my intro.
Oh, Jack. Jack O'Hara. Boy, you asked me some interesting questions, my man.
It's a great question, Jack.
Jack, hey, it's Josh Radner.
Hey there, Jack O'Hara. It's Johnny Damon.
Jack, you had questions for me.
Jack O'Hara? Absolutely.
This message is for Jack O'Hara. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Jack.
Jack, hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, Jack? Listen, man, you know, you asked me a couple questions.
Broadcasting around the world, you're listening to The O Show.
In the show and doing your thing, I mean, you've got some pretty big name guests. I've seen your stuff, so congratulations on your success.
Jack O'Hara.
Much nicer guy than Conan O'Brien, with much better interviewing skills.
Don't forget to share this episode on your social media. Now, let's get to it.
I am so boned. I forgot to get my girl tickets for the show tomorrow, and now it's sold out. It's her freaking birthday.
Aw, dude. She's totally gonna break up with you.
She's definitely gonna break up with me.
Should've used TickPick.
Wait, what'd you say?
TickPick. Look.
Whoa.
What? There are no hidden fees. What'd you guys think I said?
Oh, TickPick. I thought you said
TickPick. No hidden fees. Download today.
You know, those are some good questions, Jack. I think my favorite shot, if you look at my show, is an episode where I'm wearing a NASCAR 88 jersey. That was Dale Jarrett. And 88 was the number that you needed to get into syndication. So I called him up and I asked him if I could get his jerseys. We became friends. And whenever I see it or see a clip of 88, I know that's the day that I made the money. Slash and I went to the Viper Room one night to go see Ace Frehley, and when we were walking in, a fireman said, "Hey, Slash, remember me?" And Slash's like, "No." And he goes, "When you got T-boned right here at the corner of Sunset and like Larrabee," he goes, "I went into your Pathfinder and brought out your leather jacket," and Slash is like, "Oh, thanks." Paradise City, favorite solo, I think, maybe, you know, Beat It from Van Halen, and I did steal Freddie Prinze's headstone. Not proud of it, but I used it for currency to drive my ambition and my dream. And I believe that I repaid the debt after, you know, meeting his family and also paying for his star and his family to be there at the unveiling of what wouldn't have happened, really, the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Good luck with your podcast.
I'm so boned. I forgot to get my girl tickets for the show tomorrow, and now it's sold out. It's her freaking birthday.
Aw, dude. She's totally gonna break up with you.
She's definitely gonna break up with me.
Should've used TickPick.
Wait, what'd you say?
TickPick. Look.
Whoa.
What? There are no hidden fees. What'd you guys think I said?
Oh, TickPick. I thought you said
TickPick. No hidden fees. Download today.
Just about everybody. I mean, I don't know about you. I know you guys did the Korean Baseball League, that broadcast just a few weeks ago. How was that? Kind of doing it from... Still doing it? How was that doing it from your home?
I think on multiple levels, it's different. It's difficult. We're getting up at 3 a.m. The game's at 5:30. And, you know, 2-3 times a week. And you're learning, you know, a group of players that you don't know. And then from a technical standpoint, you know, it's akin to turning the volume down on a broadcast and just trying to do play-by-play. You have no idea when they're going to roll a replay, what graphics they may show, any of it. So you just kind of roll with it. I said it's sort of like log rolling for three and a half hours, and then every once in a while, they throw me some chainsaws to juggle as well.
How different is it from calling a major league broadcast? Like, did any of their PR guys kind of like give you any tips or any other things that you didn't know going in?
I would say that it's here's where it's challenging is that there's that technical. I mean, I'm calling it on a 12-inch monitor.
Yeah.
So it's that part's really difficult. so you don't see that well, and you're used to just being at the park and seeing from the view that you see from. And then there are these, you know, with the teams that I do, I know the teams very well. You know, yeah. The Yankees played the Red Sox. I don't need them even to have numbers on. I know the shapes and sizes of all the players. But with these guys, I don't know them. I'm not familiar with their names. So I think that it'll be a little easier when it's a major league game. But there's a lot of different challenges with KBO stuff, for sure.
Well, you're definitely keeping your reps up. You guys are definitely keeping your reps up. For you, as a broadcaster, again, I'm an aspiring young broadcaster. At what age growing up, because I know you grew up in the Philadelphia area on the East Coast, for you, when did you realize that you wanted to be in sports media? Like, not necessarily as a broadcaster, because I know you wanted to be a talk show host as well. When did you know that you wanted to be in sports media in general?
It's hard to say. I like playing. I mean, I always loved baseball and always loved sports, but I love baseball the most. And I went and played baseball at the College of William & Mary for a year, and then I transferred to Boston College and got involved with the student radio station there. I would say going into college, I knew that it was something I wanted to pursue. What actual, you know, discipline aspect of sports media, I wasn't entirely sure. I felt like I was an informed sports fan. I had opinions. I liked researching. So sports talk was what appealed to me to begin with. I think I always had some idea that I would like play-by-play. And I knew baseball was my favorite sport. So it just, it kind of took shape as it went along. You know, when I first got down to Miami and did sports talk radio, I would go into the empty Marlins broadcast booth and do games into a tape recorder. And then eventually I got a good enough tape that I gave it to someone. They gave it to somebody who offered me a job in Boise, Idaho. And then I came back and I've just sort of been, you know, kind of climbing since.
So what was your first official broadcast gig as a play-by-play guy?
Well, I mean, I did some in college, but not baseball. Right. I mean, my first real play-by-play gig where they paid me for it was in Boise, Idaho, and I was 25 or 6.
Wow. Wow. So for you, now a veteran in this business, do you still, before a broadcast, I don't want to say get nervous, because you probably don't get nervous, but do you get anxious before a broadcast? Like, you get excited, like you get ready to go? Like, in a sense of, like, again, not like nervous energy, but anxious energy?
So, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm human like everybody else. I think if I ever have anxious energy or anxiety, I think that where it's changed, thankfully, is that shift from I'm always prepared, but sometimes I get into the weeds of, like, the routine of what I go through to feel prepared. And there's a distinction there. You know, I do this and then this and then this and then this. And sometimes the time squeeze comes and it makes it challenging. It's one of the things with the Korean baseball that's probably good for me is, you know, I like getting the lineups as early as possible so I can focus on those guys and the specific players. We don't get the lineups till 30 minutes before first pitch, and twice already we've had them call us 10 minutes to air and say, okay, so that game you were going to do, it got rained out. We're going to do a different game. And I'm like, a different game? Yeah, you're going to do a different game. So you just kind of got to roll with it. But in terms of, I still get excited. I'm still excited, and especially the bigger the game, it's exciting. It's fun.
So in that sense, like, you could still say you're a fan of some sorts. When you were growing up, and I guess you got to be in this business, but you growing up, what do you think was your last, again, like, don't want to say, like, non-baseball fan moment, but like, your last fan experience where you were in the stands, like, with your friends, just having a good time, and it was just a very memorable moment at the ballpark?
Funny, I actually have an answer. I've never been asked the question, and I have an answer to that question.
Sweet.
And it was in 2003, the Marlins won the World Series, and I was, you know, one of the radio broadcasters, and it was amazing. And in 2004, the Marlins ended on the stretch, and but it wasn't looking great. And a couple of friends I went to Boston College with and a friend from home towards the end of the year said, hey, can you get playoff tickets for other teams? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, why don't you get us Red Sox playoff tickets? So in 2004, I flew up to Boston. I didn't see the Ortiz walk off in the division series, but I flew up to Boston and was in the stands for game 3, 4, and 5 at Fenway Park. So I was in the park just with fans for the Robert Steele. I was on the Green Monster for game 5. I had some guy run at me and just jump into my arms. And then I was there for the first two games of the World Series when they broke the curse. It was a pretty neat experience. I mean, I didn't grow up a Red Sox fan, right, but I could appreciate the pain and the suffering. And yeah, that was, I mean, that was just there as a fan. It was, and I was living in Miami, so I would fly up to go. So that's for the last time that I was there, and I was just with my boys, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
In other sports, there have been, you know, other moments like that since, but baseball-wise, yeah, that's the last real fan experience where, you know, we went there to game three, the Red Sox got their butts beat, and we left early. And so we were walking back to the hotel, and it was like every bar we stopped at, the Yankees just kept scoring. And then I think game 4, there was a rainout, and then they eventually played game 4, and I stayed for 4 and 5. It was amazing.
Wow. So being back at Fenway as a broadcaster and looking back at that moment before they won the World Series in 04, is it a totally different atmosphere? Because every Sox fan I kind of ask is like, yeah, I mean, back then, like that Yankee-Red Sox rivalry when they were chanting 1918 all the time, right, totally different rivalry, totally different atmosphere.
Well, again, remember, I've been there, you know, in 2003, the Marlins played the Red Sox at Fenway.
Yeah.
And broadcasted games there. And I would say that besides the Miami stadiums, Fenway's probably the park I've done the most games in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's changed. You know, look, it's an interesting one. I would say, I think the Red Sox, you know, ending the curse and doing it against the Yankees and doing it in the only experience any team has ever had coming from behind from 3-0 in baseball. I mean, it's one of the most significant moments in the history of the sport. And it also, I would say, at least for now, has adversely affected the rivalry. Because that pain that the Red Sox, when is this ever going to happen for us? Why does this team keep beating our ass?
Right.
It's not the same. There's still an inferiority complex, but, you know, you're still talking. I mean, since 2004, the Red Sox, they won in 4 and 7 and 13 and 18. You know, they won more than the Yankees.
Yep.
So there's not as much pain there. So and they've only played in the playoffs just the one time. And that was 2018.
Right.
So it's just not so it was a significant moment that impacted rivalry going forward. So,
right.
In my opinion.
For you, as obviously a big baseball guy, big baseball broadcaster, do you get the same type of adrenaline when you're calling different sports as opposed to baseball?
Yeah, the only two sports that I call mainly now are baseball and college basketball.
Yeah.
And for college basketball, it's so energy dependent on the crowd. And the place I do a non-conference schedule. Then I've been in the Big 12. And Kansas is a place that I think is second to none. I don't know that I think Duke is even at the same level in terms of atmosphere that Kansas is. And so... You know, you do those games, and it's like you're conducting an orchestra. When Kansas is down a dozen in the second half, and they get a steal and a dunk to make it 10, the crowd gets, you know, the good crowds aren't waiting for something good to happen. They're urging the team on to make it happen. And in Kansas, it's one of those things where they get the steal and the dunk to make it 10, and they cut it to 8-6-4, and then the 3 to take the lead. And then I can just shut up and just sit there and just, like, lay out, and the crowd goes crazy. and it's like having a third person in the booth.
Oh, yeah. For you, and you talk about a third person, I've listened to a few of your interviews on some other podcasts. You prefer that three-man booth on TV. What do you think makes that so different and kind of a different type of, like, versatile team when it comes to three people as opposed to two in the booth?
Yeah, I mean, I've changed. I'm talking about baseball specifically, but I just look at the amount of time you're being asked. The games are longer. The ball is in play less. There's more time between pitches. There's just more space.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, do I think it's impossible for two guys to do it well? No, but I would say consistently at this point, you know, your standard game is going a really extended period, and there's a lot of content space to fill. My opinion is that nowadays, that in order to really capture and continue to deliver good content throughout a 3.5 hour broadcast, you need more than two people.
Right. And do you have a preference over TV or radio in your experience?
That's a question I get asked all the time, and I think that for the guys that do both, they understand. I'm not topping out, but they both satisfy different things. Like with radio, the thing that I really love is I've done it so much. I love the combo of quickly and efficiently describing what's happening so you can really see it in your mind's eye. And when you're efficient with your words, engaging the analyst, and it's like packing a suitcase.
Yeah.
It's like putting, you know, it's like getting 2 weeks of clothes into an overnight bag, but and doing it in the neat. It's not bursting. It's done really neatly, and everything fits in really nicely. And it takes a long time to be able to get to the place where you do that. In both mediums, the big play is the big play. And then TV-wise, I still am calling the plays, but content and getting, you know, some of my nerd on is a factor in the TV landscape.
Oh, yeah. Here's a question that I like asking broadcasters is whether it was your time in college, just getting into it, kind of getting the rhythm down, whatever, or whether it was recent, because it happens, we're human. What do you think your biggest broadcast blunder was on the air when it just came to, like, verbiage or something that you were just like, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or something that you kind of just turned to your partner and was just like, man, really screwed up there?
I don't know what to tell. Look, there's a part of me, I don't think that everybody recognizes that if I made you just sit and talk for 3 hours and 15 minutes straight, you'd say dumb shit.
Right.
And my goal is to try and not say dumb shit. but to avoid it is challenging. So I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to misspeak. I might present a point that's dumb. And I think usually when I do, I'm probably as close to the first to call myself out on it as anyone.
Yeah.
You try and make that the thing. You want to try and be, you know, as authentic as possible. So I don't have a specific, you know, blunder that comes to mind, to be honest with you. But I'm comfortable. So at times I'll just spit stuff out off the top of my head.
Right.
That's dumb. I try to avoid it, but I think you got to just be honest with yourself. And if you say something dumb, correct it. Or if you say something really dumb, just, you know, I'll sometimes be like, I don't know why I just said that.
Right. How important do you feel it is to, again, like, everybody's got to be themselves. It's the only way you're going to be successful in any business, really, to be yourself. But how important do you think it is kind of throwing in and mixing in your personality as opposed to kind of just going through the motions for anybody's sense? Like, do you think that's, like, a big mistake that young broadcasters make, trying to kind of emulate someone else and trying to be someone else rather than themselves?
Yeah, but it's natural, and it's also, there are so many mechanical components to radio and TV that takes a long while to get really comfortable with that stuff and the information and what's happening on the field to really let that stuff come out. The other thing is, look, whatever you want to say, baseball and baseball broadcasting is still, it's governed in general as a very conservative, white, older sport.
Mm-hmm.
And so even guys your age, you think about broadcasters, I think everybody gets into it and they just kind of, at least initially, start to drift towards trying to sound like a 65-year-old white guy. And people, it's, you know, like, and using phrases that you just wouldn't use in everyday life. But until you get really comfortable with all the other stuff, I don't think it's so easy to, I think it's easier said than done. I think it takes longer to really settle into who you are on the air. And I think that, yeah, you want to be your authentic self, but it's not always so simple.
Right. Were there any guys that you emulated growing up in college when you first started out? Anybody that you looked up to when you were a kid?
I mean, look, I think growing up, I loved Harry Callis, who was the voice of the Phillies. He was the voice of NFL Films. You know, had one of the best voices of all time. I think we all want to be Scully. I've said that before. I think that every one of us wants to write verbal poetry.
Right.
And then we realize we don't have the thesaurus-like vocabulary, and you got to figure something else out. Right. Everyone, you know, like John Miller. Yeah, John Miller can be Scully. I mean, that's just, he has that skill set, and he can do it. But for most of us, we're not capable of that. So it just, you sort it out. And I know for me, it took a long time. I mean, I'm 50, and I, you know, me as a broadcaster at 40, even, I would say 35, I'm different than now.
Right. And what would you say is the biggest critique or piece of advice that you got from a veteran broadcaster when you were first starting out?
So the one that helped me the most was a mechanical piece of advice from John Miller. And that is a mechanic talking about the mechanics of play-by-play on the radio, and that you always want to say, here's the pitch, before you think you do.
Right.
Because you want the space. So in terms of how it sounds, like, you can't say, here's the pitch, in sync with the pitcher and create that space, because the ball is going to hit the mitt and be faster than it coming out of your mouth.
Right.
So as you're saying, here's the pitch, the TCH, the ball's hitting the bat. You hear it underneath, and that's not what you want. So you only, and then what it does is mechanically it sets you up to create the sounds, so that you want to say it just slightly ahead, so that it's, here's the 2-2. Here's the 2-2, or here's the pitch, and the ball's hitting the bat underneath. You want it to be that, you know, space and segment, and you put yourself in so much of a better spot.
So I guess the follow-up question to that would be, what do you think is the biggest mistake that you've seen from young broadcasters today, whether it's on the mic or even, like, behind-the-scenes social media type stuff?
I can't speak, you know, everybody's social media, you know, I'm older, relatively speaking, so I'm probably going to say be more, you know, conservative. I don't think you want to get into fights with people on Twitter. It's not the place to try and convince or make your arguments. I use Twitter as a place to get information and to play. I like being playful on it. I don't want to get into some type of serious thing. As far as mistakes guys make, I just think start the play. I think that especially on the radio, it's start the play. Let me know the play is happening. I think that the way you get good at it is just get it to the basics. Like, stop trying to sound like something and tell me 9 million things. Get me, when the pitcher has the ball on the mound and he's here, that's when I need you. So I don't want it to be, we're having a conversation, there's a ball outside, and we keep talking foul back, and we're continuing to talk, that's in the dirt, 2-1. It's not like that. No, I want you to tell me, here comes the 2-2 outside.
Right.
Like, I need, I, you gotta, and just do that. And it's like a building block, and that's your base. And if you can give me that each time, this is the play. The play is beginning. Swinging a ground ball to third, pulled foul, 0-1. And then, you know, do your stuff, put your shit in there. But then he gets back on the mound, and then tell me the play's starting again.
Right.
Just give me that basic, just learn those basic things, the basic timing over and over again, and then you can do your stuff. Once you get that, you know, in baseball they talk about, scouting-wise, they talk about this guy at shortstop, he got better at shortstop because his clock improved, or a guy's good. And what it is it's just this internal thing that he knows how fast the runner is.
Right.
He knows how much time he has, depending on when the ball's hit to him, how much time to take. The broadcasters get that as well. Once you get your internal clock, you know, that's what happens. Sorry, we got sirens outside.
It's all good. It's New York City, baby. Who have you learned, more from in your time broadcasting, a former or current veteran broadcaster or an analyst, someone who's actually played the game, like someone who you're in the booth with that is a 15, 20-year veteran who actually can relate to what's going on the field?
I don't know that I would say learned more from. I've learned the most just from doing it and finding my own path. I mean, like so many baseball people and analysts have taught me so much stuff. It'd be impossible for me to name all the smart ex-players that have helped me understand things. And even still, I can't see all the stuff that they can see.
Right.
But, and broadcasters as well. But I think it's just kind of a path. You find your way. You find your own way.
And how do you think developing those relationships with players off the field was, not only starting out, but like now as well? And do you have any players that you kind of, I don't want to say favor more than others, but players that you've developed better relationships as opposed to others?
I mean, it's crucial because you want to tell their story.
Yeah.
So I think that being curious and connecting with guys is a huge, it's what I miss now. Like, mm-hmm. That's the thing. And when we do the one thing I will tell you about this year, so I'm not going to see people. That's the thing. I miss that part, or I'll miss that part of it, you know, time way. You connect with people, and it's just, for me, it's so important in order to, just learn who they are and relay that stuff to the fans. Fans love it, you know.
Do you have any, like, interesting or weird stories when it comes to players, whether it was a good thing, like a good funny thing, or a story where it was kind of like they had to pull you to the side and say, like, why'd you say that on the air?
I haven't gotten a ton of that, you know. But a good example of, like, cultivating relationships, and then, you know, there's a story – I told this one before where I do a walk and talk segment 90 feet. And we were doing an Angels Diamondbacks game. And my producer called me he texted me, what are you thinking for 90 feet? And I texted him back, I'm thinking about Torrey Lovello. And then he didn't text me back. And the next day I was like, I'll hit Torrey because I know him, you know, pretty good relationship with Torrey, you know, to set up the interview. And when I went to go text Torrey, I realized that at 11 o'clock at night, I had sent Torrey Lovello a text that said, I'm thinking about Torrey Lovello. So, you know, as soon as you see that, you're like, no, you know, and you want to take it back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, Tor, sorry for the weird text, but I thought I was sending that to my producer. Wanted to see about. And then, so when I did the 90 feet, the last question I asked him was, what's the creepiest text you've gotten in the last 6 months? And he was just like, you know. Then we told the story on the air, you know?
What's that like? Obviously, you got to ask for permission when it comes to stuff like joking around in the clubhouse, and then you're like, can I use that on air? And they're like, sure, no.
Yeah, that's how you do. I think that's how you build trust. You know, one of the things I loved and really got connected with Chipper Jones was he would let me use everything, but I'd ask, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to CeCe Sabathia the other day on the phone, and he said to me when we were just chatting, he's like, if I was in my prime, he's like, I wouldn't play during COVID.
Right.
And so, and then I was on the air the next day, and I texted him, and I was like, can I use that? And he was like, absolutely. I watched Chipper Jones and John Smoltz play backgammon one time, and Chipper came roaring back from, like, way down, rolled double sixes, like, I don't know how many times in a row to beat him. And when he beat him, he was like, woo! And at the end of it, I said, I've never seen you that emotional feel. And he looks at me and then looks at John and looks back at me and goes, what can I say? He's my New York Mets.
That's and, good.
Right. And then I said, and then when he was done playing, I was like, can I say that on the air? And he's like, yeah. But, like, there's stuff like that that I can't use.
Right.
But I would say that if you establish that level of trust, yeah.
You talked about emotion there a little bit. How do you think, for you guys in the booth, as well as the players, are going to be able to adapt to having no fans at all in the crowd? It's just going to be empty. And for you guys in the booth, they're basically going to be able to hear everything that you guys have to say.
Well, no, they're not. Because, number one, they're going to pipe crowd noise in, I think, okay, to every ballpark. So that's the one thing. And then when we're doing it, I'm going to be remotely located. And they're only going to be able – there's only going to be the home team's broadcasters will be the only ones there, okay, even if you could hear them.
Okay.
So I don't think that that's going to be – I think it's going to be weird. I mean, in the Korea games, they have a cheer squad, which is odd, but they also pump in some crowd noise too. So – it's just been different. Yeah. I'd also say, you know, I broadcasted for the Marlins for 8 years. I know what doing games with nobody in the stands.
Fair enough, fair enough. So one last question before I let you go. I don't want to take too much of your time. But given all of your experience to this point, we kind of talked about what kind of makes a broadcast successful, what doesn't for young aspiring broadcasters as well. What do you think are the key components, though, to having a not only successful broadcast, but kind of an entertaining broadcast for the viewer?
The three notes I'm always trying to hit are interesting, smart, fun. That's it. That's what I'm looking to try and hit, those three. Interesting, smart, fun. So, you know, I'm not trying to turn it into math class as it relates to analytics, but I do want there to be smart stuff, and I want to get into topics that are interesting.
Right.
So that's really – that's it. That's what's in my head all the time when I'm doing the games. Want to have some fun. I like to play. I'm playful, smart, interesting. Those are the things. That's it.
Well, you're keeping it interesting with the KBO right now. Hopefully we'll get you. We'll see you in MLB in a few weeks. Again, the season starts in just 10 days. Yankees Nationals on national TV. John, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to me here. And again, hopefully we hear you on the air in just a couple of weeks.
All right, Jack. Thanks, man.
I'm so boned. I forgot to get my girl tickets for the show tomorrow, and now it's sold out. It's her freaking birthday.
Aw, dude. She's totally gonna break up with you.
She's definitely gonna break up with me.
Should've used TickPick.
Wait, what'd you say?
TickPick. Look.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Dude.
What? There are no hidden fees. What'd you guys think I said?
Oh, TickPick. I thought you said...
TickPick. No hidden fees. Download today.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.